the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
Due to holidays, which I'm very blessed to be able to take, I've not been able to get to many of these series. What about you guys? How many of you have been here for at least one of these series on looking at paintings? Oh, you're just so much more holy than I am. How about, is there anyone who's been to all of them? Oh, great. Yeah, well, it's all right. No, we believe in grace. So it's fine if, like me, you actually haven't been to any of them previously. But I'm really looking forward to catching up online, because I think it's great that we got this slightly different take on looking on stories of Jesus. So what we'll do is we'll look at a passage in Matthew's Gospel. So if you'd like to grab your green Bibles, page 943, Matthew 26. We're going to start at verse 57. Really well-known part of Jesus's life. Jesus has just been arrested in the garden. He's gone with his 12 disciples. Judas has betrayed him, and he's just been arrested. So we'll start from verse 57 on page 943. Those who had arrested Jesus took him to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the teachers of the law and the elders had assembled. But Peter followed him at a distance, right up to the courtyard of the high priest. He entered and sat down with the guards to see the outcome. The chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for false evidence against Jesus so that they could put him to death. But they did not find any, though many false witnesses came forward. Finally, two came forward and declared, "This fellow said, 'I am able to destroy the temple of God and rebuild it in 3 days.'" Then the high priest stood up and said to Jesus, "Are you going to answer? What is this testimony that these men are bringing against you?" But Jesus remained silent. The high priest said to him, "I charge you under oath by the living God, tell us if you are the Messiah, the Son of God." "You have said so," Jesus replied. "But I say to all of you, from now on, you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven." The high priest tore his clothes and said, "He has spoken blasphemy. Why do we need any more witnesses? Look, now you have heard the blasphemy. What do you think?" "He is worthy of death," they answered. Then they spat in his face and struck him with their fists. Others slapped him and said, "Prophesy to us, Messiah. Who hit you?" And we're going to leave it there. Ed, if we could have the picture up. This is the picture that we're thinking about this evening. Jesus before the chief priest. I absolutely love this picture. I didn't know it existed until 18 months ago. I went to London with Claire, a friend of mine, and we went to a Caravaggio exhibition at the National Gallery. It wasn't just Caravaggio, it was about painters who were painting around the same time as him. So this was painted in about 1617. I turned a corner, and at the end of a corridor in the gallery, this painting was lit, and I'd never seen it before, and it took my breath away. It still utterly takes my breath away. It touches my heart at a deep level, which I think really good art is supposed to do. This picture is all about Jesus. If you want to, when I'm talking, come and get a closer look at it, then please don't be shy. You can come and look, see the expression on Jesus's face. Just come and take in this picture. There's a single candle in the middle of the picture that's lighting up the darkness. Jesus, the light of the world, stands in the darkness. You know, Jesus, the light of the world, is about to face his worst hours on earth. This is my Saviour. This is my Jesus. This is your Saviour. This is your Jesus. This is Jesus, a man in his early 30s, about to face huge pain and humiliation and rejection. This is Jesus, the Son of God, the King of Kings, the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation, the one who created all things in heaven, all things on earth. This Jesus has been dragged in the middle of the night to the house of the chief priest after being betrayed by a close friend. This Jesus is having to stand there and listen while an arrogant, pompous chief priest wags his finger at him. He's wagging his finger at the light of the world, and the light of the world just stands there and takes it. I think that's what first took my breath away about this painting. He stands there and he takes it. He takes it for the love of the whole world, for the love of you and for the love of me. He stands there and takes it for the love of anyone who walks through that door. So I'm not going to be too long tonight. I just want to think about three things to wonder at, to marvel at, three things to open our heart to and let our heart be touched by. The first thing that I think the painter, who is a guy called Gerrit von Hondhorst, that's a nice word that trips off the tongue there, isn't it? He's a Dutch painter. He spent 10 years in Rome. He actually was quite famous in his lifetime. So he wasn't one of these poor, scrabbling around artists. He did lots and lots of other work. He's quite well known for painting contrast between light and dark. But what I love is what the light is showing us. And what I love is the expression on Jesus's face and his pose. So I think the first thing to wonder at and marvel at is that Jesus is choosing to stand there. The chief priest, we've read before, he's had the support of a violent crowd. He's got soldiers he can command. You can see them. Behind Jesus, there's a crowd. I think that's the soldiers who've arrested him. The chief priest has the power, it's his house, but there is no doubt in my mind, the way the artist has painted this, that Jesus is choosing to stand there. I think we can be in no doubt that it's a choice. Jesus said in the previous chapter, when he's arrested, he says, "Do you think I cannot call on my Father and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels?" I meant to look up how much a legion was and I didn't. Does anyone know how many soldiers a legion is? I don't. Is it 50, 100? 112. A legion is 112 soldiers. Centurion. So we don't know. Someone could look it up on their phone while I'm talking. That'd be great. It's a lot. Jesus says, "Don't you think I could call on my Father and he would at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels?" And he's just standing there and taking it, not because he's powerless, but because he chooses to. Five? Not sure. Get back to me on that one. This isn't the moment to fight. This is the moment to accept and submit to his Father's will. The light of the world is about to be cast into darkness. And you could almost, looking at this picture, and it's life size, it's in the National Gallery, and when you go to look at it, it's huge. It's life size, and so it kind of surrounds you. And if you look at it, you could almost reach out and pinch the light. Just snuff out the light of the world. And he is choosing that. He's choosing it for the love of the world, for the love of you and me. I think one of the reasons we know that he's choosing it is that he's previously had many arguments with the priests and the elders and the teachers of the law, the Pharisees and the Sadducees. He's puzzled them, he's angered them with his knowledge and his wisdom and his ability to uncover their selfish ambitions. We read throughout the Gospels that they're not ambitious for God, but for themselves. If you look at Matthew 23, if you turn back and look at Matthew 23, there is a whole chapter on what he thinks about the teachers of the law, and it's not pretty reading. I'll just pick out one verse, 27, 28, Matthew 23. It's on page 938. He says this: "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You are like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of the bones of the dead and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness." A little tip, I think if you want to make friends with people in power, you don't call them whitewashed tombs. He's basically saying you look good on the outside. You know, you're dressed well. You know lots of stuff. You look good on the outside, but on the inside, you're made of death. You're going to die. You're not righteous. You're like a brood of vipers, he calls them. So Jesus was not slow to tell them what he really thought of them. But now the time has come for him to stand there and accept death, because he knows that it's coming. He's standing there while this whitewashed tomb, smart on the outside, full of death on the inside, wags his finger at him. You notice there's a book of law on the table. Well, there's a book on the table, and we imagine that that's the book of the law, because the chief priest, his job is to uphold the law, the Jewish law. This law is God's rules for good and fruitful living. But just think about it. Jesus wrote the law with his father. Jesus was there when the law was given to Moses. And now it's been used against him. He could tie the chief priest in knots with his knowledge of the law, with his knowledge of how to be righteous. You know, he could get 12 legions of angels and throw every single page at him, but he doesn't. He just stands there and accepts it, because he knows that the law won't ever get people to God. The law won't ever get people to be perfect. He knows that the people need a new way to come to God. Apart from those ancient rules, they need him. I don't know whether you can see it from where you are. On his right wrist is a rope. You can just see it if you want to come forward and have a look at it. Jesus' hands are tied. He has been dragged there by soldiers. But he's not straining against the rope, is he? I think the other reason we can see that he's not accepting it, apart from the look on his face and the fact that he has previously challenged the chief priests, is that he's not straining against the rope. You know, his hands are still. Hands that flung stars into space, we sometimes sing, are still. You know, the one Jesus who's totally righteous in the eyes of the law, he's never done anything wrong, is having a dirty, grimy, hypocritical finger wagged at him. And he's accepting it. And it takes my breath away that he's choosing to accept it when actually he's done nothing wrong and he could call 12 legions of angels to get him out of the situation. And I think we can all think of times when we wag our dirty little grimy fingers at God and say, "No, you've got it wrong, I've got it right, I know what I'm doing, I'm in control, I'm going to do it this way. And in some ways he accepts it and just says, just look and see what I've done for you. Just wait and see how much I love you. So the first thing I think that this artist, Gerrit van Honthorst, has shown amazingly is that Jesus is accepting this and he is choosing to stand there. The second thing is that Jesus is on his own. Again, if you get closer, his expression on his face is, he's really tired. You can see these lines under his eyes. It's late. It's the middle of the night. He's been praying in the garden for the strength to follow his Father's will. This is the worst night of his life, and he's tired, and he's on his own. You know, his friends, those that he loved deeply, the disciples, they have gone. The story of Jesus before the chief priests occurs in all four of the Gospels, in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And in all of them, Jesus is in the house of the high priest, the chief priest, and Peter, meanwhile, is standing from a distance and denying that he ever knew Jesus. These two stories are interwoven. Peter, probably his best friend on earth, has abandoned him. He said, no, didn't know him, never knew him. Jesus is really on his own. Behind the priests, if you look, there's two pretty dodgy figures in black. In the law, in the Jewish law, there needs to be two witnesses in the courts. So even though this whole thing is a bit of a sham, they couldn't find any witnesses who agreed that Jesus has done anything wrong. They managed to get these two who have come up with these trumped up charges. So the chief priest kind of wants to take some refuge that things are being done properly. Mark's gospel tells us he scrabbled around to find people whose stories match, and eventually they find it. The chief priest is the leader of 70 other priests, both Pharisees and Sadducees, in a kind of ruling council over the Jewish people, the Jewish religious law. He's not on his own. He has these false witnesses. He's standing in front of Jesus. He has the soldiers behind him. Jesus is on his own, completely hemmed in. And I think he looks it, doesn't he? And I think there's times in my life, not only do I wag my finger at Jesus and say, I know best, you've got it wrong, I also leave him. I never knew you. I'm going to do things my way. He never leaves me, but I leave him. I get wrapped up sometimes in my own life, in my own ambition. Sometimes I'm too scared to fully commit to this man, this son of God, to risk my own skin. You know, how could I when he's on his own? How could I? How could you? But we all do it. We abandon the light of the world because I think we prefer darkness. So that's two things. Jesus is standing there accepting it. Jesus is on his own. The final thing I want to say is the irony of this painting is amazing. The chief priest is wagging his finger at the light of the world, and he doesn't have a clue what's happening. He's the chief priest. He's the big cheese. He's the one in charge, and he doesn't really have a clue what's happening. But maybe we shouldn't be quite so hard on him, because when Jesus came, it was so radical. What the chief priests wanted was a human ruler, a political ruler who was going to free them from the Romans. The chief priests wanted a human hero, a king who could lead the people to become a strong nation again, but to keep the priests doing the same old thing. The priests still being the go-between between the people and God. Every year, the chief priest would make sacrifices for the sins of the people, the things the people had done wrong, the way that they had turned from God. And he thought it would be like that forever. He thought that the priests would always be the mediators, the go-between between God's people and God. And the irony of this picture is that the chief priest is wagging his finger with all the power at Jesus, but Jesus is the great high priest. That's what the Bible tells us. The true priest is Jesus. Jesus is a rescue that is so much better than the rules and regulations of a law, following a religious law. Jesus is one who can really be the go-between between us and God. The chief priest is wagging his finger at the great high priest. Now, to help us understand this, let's go to Hebrews chapter 7. If you look at page 1140, Hebrews chapter 7, verse 18 and 19. The former regulation is set aside because it was weak and useless, for the law made nothing perfect. The rules and regulations that the chief priests were trying to make the people do, the sacrifices that the chief priests would have to make, ultimately failed because people were weak. They couldn't follow God by just following a whole set of rules. For the law made nothing perfect. The rules just tell us where we fall short. They can't actually help us keep them. And a better hope is introduced by which we draw near to God. Verse 25 says this: because Jesus lives forever, he has a permanent priesthood. That chief priest is going to die. But Jesus lives forever. He is able to save completely those who come to God through him, because he always lives to intercede for them. He's living. He's praying to God for us. Then if we look at verse 25, it says, such a high priest meets our need. One who is holy, blameless, pure, set apart from sinners, exalted above the heavens. Unlike other high priests, he does not need to offer sacrifices day after day, first for his own sins and then for the sins of the people. He sacrificed for their sins once for all when he offered himself. The chief priest doesn't have a clue. You know, he knows how to fill the regulations, but here is someone standing before him who's not just going to do the sacrifices, he's going to be the sacrifice once for all, forever. So the age of the priests is going, the tide is turning. People can come directly to God through Jesus. And I just love the way that that's captured in the picture. The priest is wagging his finger at Jesus. He looks like he's got all the power. But the tide is turning, and Jesus is going to be the sacrifice once and for all, so that we can come to God directly. So look at him there, Jesus. I'm not going to say any more. Just have a look. He's tired. He's friendless. He's humiliated. He's soon to be spat at. But he's also holy and blameless and pure and set apart, exalted in the heavens, it says, but coming down to earth to get you, to get me, to take us back to a God who loves us. You know, I may wag my finger at Jesus, I may leave him, I may choose to do my own thing, but he will always be my great high priest. He gives me his rightness, his righteousness. I'm blameless because of him, because of his sacrifice. You know, this is my Jesus, your Jesus, my Saviour, your Saviour. And I think that is why this picture just takes my breath away.